My name is John Killick. I'm a great pleasure to introduce Jan, who I've known for many years. I've just learned something about you, Jan, reading your bio, which is really sad for what I thought I knew about you.
Did a spinning valuation.
Yeah.
That's part of my life.
So someone said that you were a well-rounded actuary, so maybe that's what they meant, is that period of your life when you did valuations. Yeah. So, for those who don't know Jan already, she is a fellow of the Australian Institute of Actuaries and also the Singapore Actuarial Society. She has over 10 years' experience in financial services across life insurance, super, and investments. Jan joined AXA France Life and Health Re in 2016 in Singapore, where she is the Business Development Director for Asia Pacific, part of AXA's growing global life reinsurance operation. Now that's straight off their sales pitch, isn't it? Yeah. Jan's experience enables her to deliver insurance and financial outcomes for life insurance companies, which meet the needs of a diverse range of stakeholders in identifying and managing risks across highly dynamic market landscapes using reinsurance. Wow, that's a really good tongue-twisting sentence. There's a comma in the middle of it. Other than that, it's just three lines of words. Before joining AXA France, Jan worked in a variety of roles across life insurance and superannuation. Her most recent role was at Aon Benfield, where she was the director and life actuary working in the Asia Pacific reinsurance team based in Singapore. Her primary role was to provide strategic advice with tailored reinsurance solutions for life and superannuation clients across Asia Pacific in relation to structuring and designing the optimal risk transfer solutions via reinsurance. Wow. Before this, she was normal. I mean, she also worked at Actuarial Consulting at Deloitte, Asset Consulting, Towers Watson, and Life Valuations at AMP. We have to start somewhere, don't we? What it all means is that Jan is very well placed to give us a good view at the life insurance across Asia. This is Jan.
Thanks, John.
I don't know if I need the mic. There you go. Thanks very much. I must admit, I don't think the title gives much of it away. You know, it's like, is it about fitness? Is it about my holiday snaps in Asia? So I probably should have thought about that a bit better. Does this work? Where do I point?
That's not going to do anything.
No?
Yeah,
okay.
We'll change things.
That's all right.
I assume that's you.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
1 second, just let it load and it'll...
There you go.
And that should work now.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So today's session is mainly going to be a bit of a best of hits of products in Asia. Some lessons, hopefully, some winners out there, some takeaways. Feel free to grab me if you've got any questions thereafter, because I'm not going to be going into heaps of details because the market's huge. It's a lot of countries, a lot of products. It's a lot of consumers. Okay. So I'll start from a more familiar ground, group business. So something we're very, very comfortable with in the Aussie market. It's a huge market for us. Recently, on the left, you can see on the Aussie side, I did a bit of summary and comparison. So for the Australia side, it's largely industry funds. It used to be corporates, but it's going into, pretty much today, it's dominated by the large industry funds. Although there's a question mark around the recent budget, whether if corporates come in favour again. So watch that space. Whereas in Asia, corporates are still very much on top. It's largely employers looking after employees. So in Asia, that's generally the scheme, the flow. Yeah. Similar style of products, you know, your basic bread and butter, death, TBD, GSC on the Aussie side. Asia, same thing, death, TBD, GSC is growing. You've still got group trauma. Group trauma is huge part of every staple group business. 37, 35 definitions, so not the major four. They do the whole bell and whistles. GPA, so a personal accident or accident, death and disability. Very useful for journey covers, for example, to and from work. And we've got group medical as well. Australia, again, we've got a lot of deep history, a lot of data. In Asia, you're lucky to get 3 years. Buy a lottery ticket if we get 5 years of data. Buy another lottery ticket and, you know, struck by lightning if I get more than three data points for claims, you know, three numbers. So it's Asia, certainly the depth in the history is not there. You've got to be very creative, you know. No claims for the past 3 years. Great, what do I do with that for Cambodia? Australia, a good thing about Australian group market, generally stable with insurer. I don't see a lot of movements there, apart from maybe the smaller parts of the corporates, but generally fairly stable. You know, some of the major funds have been with their partners for 5 to 10 years. Asia, a lot of churn, a lot of churn. Largely possibly because it's corporates, possibly there are more brokers, possibly there are more insurers. I mean, there's at least 10. You've got everybody there. I can start listing them, plus the local ones, right? So there is more churn. Question mark whether that's good or bad, right? Australia generally target permanent workers, permanent meaning full-time and or part-time. Asia, you've got a more of a variety of working population. Overseas, secondees. You've got, these days, you've got affinity style of covers for group for Grab drivers, for example, right? There's a lot more variety of population covered in Asia as well. Australia, you've got less waiting periods. Pre-existing exclusions are generally covered. In Asia, these things are still very much there. Okay, so that's just the general comparison. Common thing. Nobody makes money. That's a common thing. Profitability is challenging. I'll share a case study here, and it's that's the common thing. Profitability is challenging everywhere. I'd say Asia, you'd be lucky to get net one, net half, even, you know, under 100. You go yes. So this is a recent case that we've just done. It's a very large corporate program. The book there is about $1 million USD, thereabouts, gross premium. So it's a large one. For Asia, this is a large one. Yeah. So the coverage, you've pretty much got all the staple coverages that you need to survive in group business in Asia. You've got death, TI, TBD, very familiar with. We've got group CI, 37 definitions. We've got GSC, 2 year benefit period, and we've got high end medical as well. It's a white collar professional services firm with a lot of employees stationed in Asia. 3 times salary, that's still the norm. More generous, you go 5. Less generous, you stay about 1. 70% of salary. Not sure why they want to be a bit different. Active at work, very similar to Oz, but it's covered up to 69. And between 70 and 74, it's on an underwritten, light underwritten basis. They've got some extras, extended benefit. So, for example, if you are deported because you're a foreign worker and you're sick, I get covered for another 12 months after being deported or after left the country. So that's nice. That's very nice. So accident, death and disability, survivor benefit. I think survivor benefit is very much a culture thing. Everything has a survivor benefit, something for your family, something for your kids. Parents don't count. No, I'm kidding. Well, actually, I'm not kidding. Parents don't count. I don't know why, but the survivor benefit is spouse and or children. GSC is again, it's a growing cover, and it's very interesting, right? They've gone straight to covering the 2 year BP, but with a balloon period, payment of TBD at the end. It's very interesting. They've gone straight to that kind of design where GSC has to play with TBD, kind of not have separated it. They've gone straight for that, right? Because you want a bit of income, so you understand the assessment, you understand you can help them earlier, you can give them rehab earlier, and then it goes TPD reassessed at the end of 24 months. AALs are huge. So this one, I was going, oh, geez, what currency is that? 2 million deaths TI, TBD, AAL. 1 million for CI. 30K per month as AAL. Don't ask me about the maximums. And then these are the countries covered. So you can see I've got Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, Singapore, Taiwan, and India. So we had to be very, very creative with this pricing. Competition was fierce. There was at least 10 quotes for insurance. And like I said, I think net margin, you're looking at about one. We had 2 pages of data, basically a gender split, age brackets. It says accounts handled by headcount basis. That was next to, you know, accounts and bordereau information says admin headcount. So going forward, I'm just going to get headcounts. That's fantastic. So we talked about waiting periods. Generally, the market has 60 to 90 days, depending on the benefit. Because there was 10 insurers quoting, the broker directly said to us, if you're going to win it, you got to remove the waiting period. So we take over all the sick, all the healthy and everything. Just great. All the lovely things. That's a challenge in Asia. The diversity, you've got to be very creative. You really have to make a lot, you know, stretch two numbers very long, right? And I think at the end of the day, you know, it's very much a challenge. So if anyone was working in Asia, this is very, very fun, very, very diverse. But if you love data and love a lot of lines of data, it's probably not the place for you yet. Okay. Very interesting development in group business. This is kind of like the next step, right? I was in China recently. I met with a company called Zhong'an. So everyone's heard this, Tencent, Ping An, Alibaba, JV, right? Interesting, we're talking about their product, they showed me their websites. Went online, an SME, 100, 200, 500, 1,000 employees, you can get a cover, death, TBD, CI, medical, PA, online in less than 10 minutes. You could be mining, you could be... it could be on an oil well somewhere, mining, you know, digging stuff, not wearing a safety helmet whilst digging stuff. And the range of AALs was stunning. So this company grew by, just their group business book, grew by 400% after launch in the first year. So... question mark, how do you compete with that if you're a general, if you're a life insurer? That's focus on numbers, focus on understanding your risk. Very focused about light blue, heavy blue, hazardous, what is. How do you compete with this? And that's going to be a growing phenomena going forward. Right? Loss ratio, question mark. Don't even ask me about the loss ratios there. I have no clue. I just have no clue. Okay, so started with group business, and then let's get to something that we don't see a lot in Oz, medical business. The main reason I think it's because it's got this selected group of specialist insurers, you know, FIAC. Call them the FIAC, but they're currently, I think, APRA is regulating them now. Asia very much is open playing field. Life, non-life insurers, they can all write medical business. The typical product sets in Australia that fall out of the FIAC because it's out of the Private Health Insurance Act and out of the Medicare Act. It's generally for expats, okay? And then for the private health insurers, for the locals, it's generally you've got hospital or you've got hospital plus some specialists. In Asia, the variety is huge. I don't know where to start. You've got group medical, which never makes money. You've got individual retail medical, which hardly makes money because it's generally a top up to the social security system, right? So there's a lot of anti-selection there because the government knows about this life more than the top-up excess layer, which the insurer knows, right? So never makes money. The micro-health, so that's to do with poverty and giving them the basic things. That possibly could make money through social, you know, feel good about doing the social good, right? And then you've got the expatriates and so forth. So Asia, there's got a lot more variety. It's very, very interesting. In Australia, understood the risks are shared because it's community rated and all the private health insurers have a reinsured pool. In Asia, there's a lot more diverse risk transfer options. So meaning reinsurance can be done. In Australia, it's very mature in terms of claims and processes. It's fairly well-oiled machine, although you still hear a lot of the, you know, the long delays and the waiting lists in the public hospitals, but it's fairly well. You know, you don't see people sick and being left on the streets, right? Whereas in Asia, the quality and the delivery and the services and the patient experience is a lot more varied. You're very lucky in Australia, very, very lucky. So in Asia, because for a lot of countries it's developing these services through the micro health delivery segment, there's a lot of fraud. And we can talk a bit about that later. I can show an example. Australia is very much an isolated benefit. I think regulation makes it so. I'm not sure if that's a great thing. I think, you know, the first warning sign is the policyholder went to see a doctor. Why? Do they need help? And then it's about, can we facilitate some income while they seek that help? And then if it doesn't work, then it's about the lump sums, right? I think Australia, we just got it wrong. Medical becomes such an isolated benefit, but it's the perfect early warning sign. Asia, it's very, very common to have medical coupled with everything, right? So in Australia, it's about public versus private, whereas in Asia, there are a lot more services, and we'll get to that later. Common, profitability, generally challenging. But if you see it as you're doing a social good, you feel a lot better. So this is micro health. So as you know, India is a growing, fast-growing market. The opportunities in India is huge. It's evident by the fact that I think there are a lot of insurance companies opening up their reinsurance companies seeking branch license. There's a lot of opportunities there. So this is a tiny, tiny segment of the India insurance or growing insurance market. I think it's only about $1 billion of premium. So tiny, really. But what it is, you know, if you think about the evolution of insurance, the first step is again, it's a social good, right? So what does a society need right now or their population to get the basic medical services? So micro health, right? But if you think about the medical business, you think the common problems with medical business, can't control inflation, late reporting, very, very late, you've got to go through the hospital, so claimant, hospital, then you wait for the receipts, and so, okay, late reporting. So these type of programs, the one that we've designed here, is try to not eliminate, but minimize it. So the first things first, inflation. That hits your bottom line, and it can be very, very corrosive on the margins. So fixed package rates. So first you take a TPA, so third-party administrator, and you fix all the major surgeries and the costs and the price of it. You fix the room and board, and you fix it for 3 to 4 years in line with your rate guarantee period. So that pretty much eliminates or minimizes medical inflation. We also put in a 30-day reporting, and we put that in the SLA with the TPAs. So that, again, minimizes IBNR. It's covering more than 1 million-plus families and includes their parents as well. So identity fraud is a huge issue for us to contain, and we're not sure what we can do about it apart from printing better identity cards. It's tough, but we have to take a margin for that. But the other way to deal with it is, you know what, let's let's minimize fraud. Let's take the fraud out of the equation. We're just going to cover you for all your families, parents, uncles, you know. We're just going to cover everyone. So you don't need to swap cards. So we cover families, extended families, and it's unlimited. So better the risk you know, right? It's very small premiums, you know, again, micro health insurance, right? So 30 USD per year, aggregate limits about 6,000 USD. So then we're not talking about a lot of money, but the premiums are huge because the sheer volume, right? Everybody's covered. Yeah. It's the ultimate default insurance. So it's the ultimate injection to the goodwill of your heart and soul. So, this is how we sleep at night sometimes. But this is, again, very, very, it's not a capacity thing. You have to have people on the ground. You have to know the TPAs that you're working with. You have to know the government hospitals that you're working with. And you have to have an early fraud detection system. Basics, right? If the you first map out your hospital, right, and I've seen this, it's got 10 beds, 20 people was admitted for surgery that day, for hernia, whatever it is, you go, impossible, right? And you go right out there and you investigate. You've got to have people on the ground. Yeah. Fraud is the biggest issue here. So that's one segment of the market, and you've got these type of businesses in micro health in Philippines, in Indonesia, Thailand. And then as the economy matures, we mature with it. So high-end medical, that's sort of right up to the other scale. So high-end medical, as and when a population, middle class emerges, middle to upper class, what do they want to do? They want to start traveling. Okay, so... And they want to have single rooms. It's like, oh, no, I don't want to share rooms with 10 other people. I want a single room, right? In case I can't work, I want a cash benefit for each overnight of stays, okay? Loss of income, right? In case I want my partner to be in the room or my kids to be in the room while I'm nursing back to health, because that helps with recovery. Their accommodation's covered as well. You've got pre-hospitalization, post-hospitalized treatment. You've got physio if in the event that it's a more of a physical. There's quite a lot, right, in here. And this is the most comprehensive medical product you've got around in Asia. This is for the middle to upper class, right? So it's for the affluent, and they wanted to start traveling. And now it's more about services. So if they're in Brazil somewhere and they're injured, they will have to call a hotline, and you're going to have to port them to the nearest hospital, and they're going to have great service there, right? Fly their companions over after they're recovering, fly them back home, right? Then it's more about services, okay? And then speaking of services, do you like the pun I did here? You know, InsurTech fever. Hey, get it? Doctors? I tried. This is the next level of medical insurance in Asia. It's InsurTech. So you kind of skip people altogether. It's like, I don't want to deal with insurance companies. I don't want to deal with people in general. So best doctors... the one here is Good Doctors, and then you've got We Doctor. I don't know who's the best, but they were first, so clearly that's very good naming. Best Doctors, Good Doctors, We Doctors, I mean, they've all got their nuances and a bit different, but one common thing, it's very much accessing the world through technology, accessing the best doctors, the best available doctors, and removing geographical boundaries, right? If you're unhappy with your local doctor, you can get a second opinion within minutes, right? It's this is the latest, and I think that's the right way to go to attract the younger audience. Yeah. You can start Googling these. I mean, they're everywhere. It's quite impressive. Okay, so appreciate time. How are we going? We're good. Okay, so section three, investment style. We again don't see a lot of these anymore in the Aussie market. They are so much fun. They really are. You know, it's something that, again, I don't understand why. I think I understood why regulations and cost of capital and the heavy capital associated with these products. But again, I mean, in the Aussie markets, it's largely not guaranteed, the investment risk. So, for example, the most extreme example is the GFC, right? If you're staring down retirement within 5 years and your balance fund halves, there's no guarantees anymore. I mean, there's just no guarantees. And that's quite distressing, I think. Whereas in Asia, it's very diverse. There's still a lot of investment-linked style products with guarantees, or another word I like to use is semi-guarantee. They call it semi-pa. So you're going to get a minimum return per annum on the single premium you've put in, but then they'll give you crediting rates above if things do well, right? And due to competition, pretty much everybody, you know, will distribute amount the same. Everybody will announce 4%, you know, for example, right? It's not a lot of guarantee, but at least it gives you some level of guarantee. Australia, it's in some ways, when I say not bundled with protection, meaning if we've got a lot of money in our retirement savings or SG accumulator pot, do we need that much for death insurance, especially if we're single and we're 30? So that's a question mark, right? So amount of coverage linked with amount of savings that you've got, whereas Asia products, it's all coupled, right? In Australia, well, in Asia, a lot of these products are selling very well through banks. Australia, there's a question mark. How much do we trust our banks? Question mark. Maybe the other reason is Australia, generally our savings ratio is very low. So probably there's not a lot to put outside of the super into these type of products. Whereas Asia, I think the savings ratios are still very, very high. Common problem, the low yield environment. That's just a common problem. I don't know how. I mean, 3 years ago I saw, no, 2 years ago I saw Ping An releasing a 5-year product where they're guaranteed 7% return a year. I don't know how they're doing it. I just don't. But for the rest of us, I think, yeah, the low yield environment, it's a challenge. Okay. So again, a typical style of investment plan. This is one from Philippines. This is Philim Life in Philippines, but they all pretty much look very similar. They've got essentially as you pay your premium more, your cash value goes up and your bonuses go up accordingly. In the event of your death, this is the amount of money your family will get in accordance with the cash value, right? So this is a very, very simple but a very, very common style of product. There are products where, you know, death or CI or any lump sum paid for insurance is net off the accumulated amount. There are ones where it's, you know, independent thereof. So there are ones where come to term, you can choose to take an annuity instead. There are ones where there's guaranteed minimum capital benefit, so meaning you are guaranteed not to lose all of your single premium, plus say 20%. There are a lot of variations of this. But these products are very, very popular in Asia, and I say they drive the most of the sales for the time being. Yeah. Okay, so once I got to this slide, it was Sunday night, and I started trying to translate this, and I went, okay, I'm going to give up. I'm going to watch Caden whatever's wedding replay instead. No, not Kate. What's her name? Megan. Anyways, them. I think there's another more interesting topic to get onto, but I think what I wanted to show here is that the variable annuity product, if it's done well, and if it's priced adequately, in a system where there are some government or social incentives to do so, it's a very, very good product, because it guarantees your capital is protected plus some margin, right? You can guarantee also the income element post-retirement. And it's a product that's used very well by the Japanese, and they've had a low-yield environment, right? So it's AXA had one called North. If people remember that product, right? It's two people in a lift, and it guarantees that you're always at a certain level, right? And then once you retire, it guarantees an income level as well. I mean, that's basically what you need. I want to save, but understand the market's volatile, but I need a minimum amount to retire, and I need a minimum amount of income to live thereafter. To me, variable annuity, GMAB and GMDB, they're the best. So A is for annuity, so it's a guaranteed upon survivorship. D is guaranteed amount upon death. And you can add a GMIB in there, which is guaranteed income upon certain conversion date. Okay? Although Asia takes it to the crazy levels, right? This is where it went all wrong, right? They start introducing things like ratchets. So you're always guaranteed a return that's the highest of the last three quarters performance of the stock market. That's when you start to get really into trouble, right? You're starting to get into trouble when you let policyholders select asset allocation. So when equity started to dip, what do? You double down more, right? Who cares? I've got a minimum. I don't care. And the insurance companies go bankrupt. Hartford is a great example. ING is another one. I think VA, and if we're sensible about it and we just do the minimum needs, it's a great product. But I think Asia, with some of the problems, it just got too complicated. This is a fun one. Critical illness and co. Commonly known Aussie market as trauma. So trauma, I think trauma is a more or less a retail product, right? It's great, but I don't see much innovation coming out of that product, to be honest. It's pretty boring, you know. You shave a few words on the exclusions and definitions from time to time, but it's fairly boring. In Asia, it's really, really exciting. Critical illness is really, really exciting. Oh, it's so exciting. Really? No, really, it is. It is. I mean, it's not enough time to say how exciting it is. Trauma. Oh, Australia, right? Trauma. It is what it is. Asia, you've got the variety of trauma. So you've got CI trauma, so that's your lump sum, you know, triggered upon diagnosis. These days you've got very popular single CI. So a lot of customers, if you know you've got a family history of something or prevalent to certain things, you just target that. I buy cancer only. I buy liver disease that covers Hep B only, right? I mean, I think the Aussie product is trying to do all singing and dancing for everyone, but you forget everybody's different. Everybody's genetic makeup is different, right? You've got hospital cash. Again, that's linked with trauma because, again, to me, right, CI product and medical business is the same. The difference is medical's reimbursement and CI is a lump sum. But there's no reason why I can't link the two, and that's through hospital cash. If you do go to hospital, loss of income, right? So it can give them a daily cash rate. If you do have a major surgery, you need a bit more money to comfort you, or you know, to top up any social gaps or any out of pocket expenses for a major surgery. They'd give you a lump sum surgery. To me, I think CI and co is the right product going forward, and co being everything that's linked to any critical disease. And they're different. The treatments that you need are different there. Right? Asia is very, very exciting. Australia, the volume's still significant, but I'd say it's probably a bit more stable. Asia, it's the huge growth line for everybody. It's a huge growth line for everyone. Profitability is challenged, but I've heard that it's recovering, I've heard. Asia, profitability can be poor, and it's a question mark there, because recently we had to develop a CI product for Vietnam. So you've got great insurance data. Right, sigh. They go, population data. Sorry, what am I going to say? Population data. And then the company goes, look, incidence rate, 2%. Population data, right? So why are you charging me four? Population data. If you're going to give them this policy, they buy it, they're going to go look for it. You know, and they're going to find something. It's like if you're following a car long enough, if you're a highway patrol cop, right? Following long enough, you're going to find him doing something wrong on the road. So it's the challenge there is population data versus insured experience, and if you're the first one in, that's the biggest danger. It's the biggest danger, right? All of a sudden, everyone's looking for cancer, and everyone finds something that's pre-CIS, and you go, ah. So, Australia's mostly YRT, which is good. It's a good thing about it, you know, so you can adjust to experience, right? Asia, it's mostly not YRT. You'd be lucky if it's 10 or 20-year rate guarantee. Most of them are whole of life. Because life, right? You've got to give people certainty. Oh, crap. Why? No, you don't. Okay, so, but it's still a great product. Coming up 5 minutes? Okay, I'm going to be very, very quick. Oh, crap, then I've got a lot to go. All right, I'll be very, very quick. Critical illness. Korea market is one of the oldest ones, okay? So 9 billion policies sold, and it's a lot bigger now. This was their loss ratio based on population data. Wonderful, wonderful. Pretty much everybody... All of these products had what they call a diagnosis benefit, so they'll give you a couple of bucks to go check up, right, as part of the wellness theme. And they all found something. Shock, horror. So that's terrible. So then after the 2000s, what the regulator's done is they've standardized the product, standardized definitions, standardized risk rates. So they had to take it in. Because one company makes a loss, retreats the market, another comes in and do the same thing and charge even less, right? So they just had to stop it, okay? So going forward, what they're doing now, this is a new type of product in Korea market. I think earlier today we've heard a lot about trying to identify even healthier lives through, say, wellness programs. This is the entirely opposite theme. In some of these mature Asia markets, all the healthy lives have at least two or three policies by now. At least. So what do? You go through the reject pile and you offer them a simplified issue. This is completely opposite. You find somebody that's a bit sick. The BMI might have not passed. The cholesterol might have been a bit high that day. The blood pressure might have been a little bit out of the range that day. And they're doing a lot of business out of this. Right? But you don't give them the all singing and all dancing product. You give them what they need. The three major CI, the three major coverage, which is lump sum for diagnosis, hospital cash and surgery. Right? And three questions to pass. Because you know they failed the full underwriting exam, right? So three questions and policies issued. This is a very, very interesting market. Simplified issue. All the reject piles. Japan has to do it. Even China's looking at it because the good lives are being picked off, right? I won't go on there, but this is the new liver product. If you get Hep B, and it's for all the people that's failed or got early stage liver disease, I think that one here. So that's the target. It's one. Sorry, I've got to just jump through. Retirement. Damn. Now we're coming to the end of our life. Okay, so 1 minute. What's the most important thing? Government has a role. Every market that's got a full-fledging post-retirement system, the government has a role. And when I talk about retirement, I just don't talk about annuities. That's for the living and the healthy, and you need an income. What about the unhealthy and that still needs an income? So that's long-term care. And all of these products, the government has a role to play. And it's very, very important. So Singapore is a classic one. Feel free to Google them. If you've got questions, feel free to drop me an email. But the Elder Shield is the one for the disabled, you know, post-retirement and you're disabled and you need that extra care, right? It's an ADL definition, right? And then China has one recently, but it's more about services. So rather than give them and make them assess on ADL, a lump sum, they actually give them services with very little bit of out-of-pocket expense, right? Singapore Life, again, it's a life annuities mandated by the Singapore government. As you reach a certain age, you have to annuitize. The problem is the fine print, which I've enlarged. Adjustments may be made to your monthly payout due to various reasons, including changing the mortality experience and investment income. Crap, that's not a great product, is it? But anyways, so CPF Life, I think to date, hasn't altered the monthly too much. And that's because they issue specific CPI-linked bonds to fund this, right, to a minimum. But, again, the government has a role. The government's there, right? Japan, J Pension, almost as exciting as it's kind of exciting, but it's not that exciting, right? So you need to enroll that much a month. Minimum contribution is 25 years. So that's pretty tough for some of the elderly workers that all have come out of the workforce that has to go back in. So now they reduced it to 10. When you retire, you get $7,000 USD per annum. That's not a lot. That's not a lot at all. But it's something, okay? And they've got survivor benefit, disability benefit. So many do buy additional products. All right, so annuity is a big market in Japan, in the private sector. Okay? Last pictures. I try to summarize my life in Asia. We work hard. That's me on a Saturday. it's very crowded. There's a lot of players. It's very dynamic. Look how enthusiastic he is. And it's all about winning, right? So that's a bit of a picture of life in Asia in puppies. All right, so any questions? Sorry I had to run through the last bit really quickly. But
Is this on? Yeah. Does anybody have any questions for Jan? Because she's covered a lot for us there. It's actually been quite a nice snapshot of a lot of things at the back there.
You were saying that there wasn't many claims to look at the group data.
Yeah.
But there's not many claims quite how the margin gets so
big. Ah, okay. Because where there's no data and there's a lot of competition, what they do is it's just a price game. So there's two ways why the price is cheap. One is because they use population data, so the margins thin, right? Population versus insured experience is different. But when there's no data, they tend to use population. And due to competition, they don't load for anything. The other thing is because a lot of the insurers actually rely on reinsurers' rates, and a lot of the reinsurers says these risk rates are enough from their other market experience. But every market is different, so that's the other naivety. And third, it's brokers. They sell a very good story. All of these businesses are broke. They sell a very, very, very good story. And then when there is experience, people love to use these credibility theory. So, it hasn't hit 5 claims. I won't, you know, this is not credible. Why bother even rating it, right? So that's the issue. Margins are not killed by frequency. Margins are killed by volatility and severity. That's the issue. They're not loading enough for the volatility. Yeah.
That's a good question, actually. And any other questions coming for Jan? Yes, please.
Oh, regulators. Where do I start? So Korea is currently pretty good because they regulate their rates through Kitty. So every insurer has to submit for every business line their experience, and then they determine risk rates. So Korea is good. Southeast Asia is a bit more strange and not so, in the sense that if they see life insurers make too much money, they will question it, I think. So to date, the regulators haven't intervened at all. China, CRRC, regulates and monitors, so that's a bit better. India, regulator has to see every price, not that they read it. That's the other problem. You go to the Hyderabad office, right, and there's piles of product and pricing submissions. I'm not sure if they read it. So you can go in there and go, loss ratio is 200%, and we recommend a rate decline. I'm not sure they read it. Every market's a bit different. But I think in Asia, which is more luckier than us Australians, there are a lot of players. There are a lot of players. There are a lot of loss leaders. And the regulator seemingly is letting it happen. I don't know why.
I think we've just about come to the, yes, we have come to the end of our time. We should be changing. If you have any other questions for Jan, please grab her or email her or call her. She's very welcome and a good chat. But please thank Jan for a very entertaining and informative presentation in the usual way. Thank you.